This year is in memory of my grandfather, Asher ben Yosef, who passed away about a month ago, or the week before Pesach. And it should be for his Eilei Neshama. But specifically, I felt was an appropriate time to give a shiur for him and for an Eilei Neshama of an ancestor anyway. Because if you look at the... Oh, source sheets are over there. The first source is from the Bnei Sassar, and it just seems to work really well with the idea of the goal of this year. He says, Nikra zeh chodesh iyar, amru dorshi rishumot shehu roshe tevot Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov Rachel heim dad ragli hamarkaba v'akshara liot hachodesh zeh hachana latora v'chana latora hi al yideh hamidot al kain mas avot kamar b'tora el hamitzvot ki b'mas avot mubarim hamidot al kain minag Yisrael lomod mesechat avot b'yamim hahim. So he says that there's an idea that ER is like an acronym for Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov Rachel, and it reminds us of the Avos and Imahos, and because ER is the only month that's completely enclosed within the Omer time, and the Omer is the time where we're working up to and preparing for Matan Torah. So how do we prepare for Matan Torah? So my dean, Rabbi Gottesman from Hank from elementary school and high school, he used to say, Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah, and apply it to this time period. Derech Eretz is the time in the Omer we're supposed to be working on our Midos, and Bnei Yisrael explains that's why, one of the reasons why anyway, why people learn Perkei Avos during this time. And we have to develop that in order to be worthy and for, to be at an appropriate state of mind to receive the Torah. So how? What better way, he says, to learn how to work on our midos than from the Avos? So he says that in the context of Perkei Avos, but I just felt like it was very appropriate around Shloshim time. There wasn't an official Shloshim for my grandfather because of Pesach, but around the time that would have been Shloshim to invoke his Zchus and learn midos from him through the lens of the Omer. So going to the second source, there's an idea that each month has a permutation of Hashem's four-letter name that's associated with it. It sounds like kind of way out there, but a lot of sitters have in the section of the Musaf, Rosh Chodesh, there's like a little star or something by the Bracha about Mekadish Yisrael Rosh Yechadashim, and there's an idea to kind of like mentally have in mind a certain permutation of Hashem's name, which is an acronym for a Pasuk that's like associated somehow with that month. So the I'm only going to talk about the first, that's two columns, one for Yud Kei Vav Kei and one for Shem Ehekeh, but just the first one is the one that relates to the Pasuk. For ER, the acronym is for a Pasuk from Yirmiyahu, which the letters spell out the words Yitalel HaMitalel HaSeichel V'yadua. And the full version of this Pasuk is in Source 3, Yirmiyahu Perek Tet. First it says, Ko Amar Hashem, Al Yitalel Chacham B'chachmato, V'al Yitalel HaGibor B'gvorato, Al Yitalel Ashir B'ashro, So Hashem is saying through the Navi that the person who's wise or strong or rich shouldn't get haughty and praise himself because he has these traits. Rather, this is what he should praise. Bezot Yitalel HaMitalel. Haskel Yadua, what should he know? A person should think about and know Hashem. Because Hashem is the one who does chesed and mishpat and tzedakah, and everything is according to Hashem. So because the pasuk beforehand starts out Al Yitalel Chacham, B'chachmato, and the acronym that's associated with ER has the word Haskel in it, so the Ari says that there's an idea that the month of ER is associated with the Seichel, with the mind. And there's, it's like a special time to be able to, like, for intellectual things. And this is the first idea that I wanted to talk about that's related to my grandfather. Because my grandfather was someone who really applied his mind to Judaism in one way or the other. He, just a little bit of background in general for this year, my grandfather grew up in a shtetl, like your classic, stereotypical shtetl in Europe and Poland. And he lived, his entire childhood was in the shtetl, so he had memories from that whole era in life. And then he was a young adult during the Holocaust, and then he came to America as a young adult and developed a life here. And he married my grandmother and lived in St. Louis. My father grew up in St. Louis, and that was the rest of his life in America. So, and he grew up in a Hasidish, very firm family in the shtetl, but over the course of the Holocaust and in his young adult life in America, he wasn't religious. And then when he was like in his 70s afterwards, he came back to religion and was about tshuva to be Shomer Shabbos and keep other things also. So one thing that from the very early time in his life, his mind, he had a very like strong mind. He told us that when he was a young man in the shtetl, he actually I'm not sure if it was in the shtetl or in the ghetto, but there was a Rav, Rav Elazar Arbach, I don't know how he remembered his name, who was a Talmud of the Ostrava Rav at the time, and he used to like teach the top shir to like only the top students in the area, and he said he was accepted to this shir. And not only was he accepted, but there weren't enough Gemaras to go around for everybody to have their own, so like they used to have to share. So Rabbi Lazar, he said, he liked my grandfather a lot, so Rabbi Lazar requested to share the Gemara with him. And he wanted to be like the partners with him in sharing Gemara. So he obviously had some kind of strength in this area. And also one of his stages of like to get a little bit of parnasa was he also worked as a melamed, like a teacher of Torah to some kids on a farm somewhere in Poland. And so in his earlier life, he definitely applied his mind to Torah and understood Torah, grasped it and taught it. But also later on, when he was already, he lived into his 90s. And already once he was in his 90s, I didn't remember the details of this story. And the reason is because it happened more than once, my father said, which is that the specific one that we remembered was when my brother was learning for smicha. So he was just talking to him and he said, oh, like, what are you learning? So my brother was learning chulin for smicha, maseches chulin. And as soon as he said that, immediately my grandfather started like reciting the first daf word for word. And he hadn't seen this daf in like, I don't know, 7 decades or something. Like he wasn't, in his later years, he wasn't an avid learner of Gemara the same way. But somehow he had the mind, the Torah just seeped in there. And he remembered that. And it, again, like that happened more than once also where he just like remembered something like that. So he really applied his mind to Torah in that way. But even in, like you might say the opposite way, he also applied his mind to Judaism in kind of like an analytical or almost skeptical way, because he had a lot of questions. Obviously people went through the Holocaust. It's not a simple thing to be Jewish and from or not from, or to be a human being and go through the Holocaust if anyone has any connection to God. So he had a lot of questions. And even before the Holocaust, his older brother was involved in the Haskalah movements and Enlightenment, and he used to like bring home like this philosophical literature and like stuff like that. And my grandfather was a thinking person. He was always a thinking person. So he used to like peek at the books and like read them and think about them. And speaking to him later in life, he always used to talk about these things and ask questions about why Hashem did this. And, you know, some people might just totally reject everything or just totally embrace everything because that's just what they do. But my grandfather wasn't like that. He really thought about it and he engaged it, and his avodas Hashem, his tefillah, was in a thinking mode. Like he challenged Hashem and he argued with him, but like he was talking to Hashem. Like he had this real relationship and connection through using his seichel. So I think that's just the first message that we could learn from him, which is related to this month of Iyar, of the seichel, of like using our minds and really applying it to like not just take everything for granted, but to really think about it and to try to learn things and remember them and just use that tool that Hashem gave us for Avodas Hashem. Related to the idea of Iyar being a good time to obtain Chachma is the idea of Emunah also. In the next source, number 4, is from a sefer called Ratz Katzvi by Rabbi Tzvi Reisman. And he quotes the Siftei Tzaddik. He says, "Tam sheyastu chazal haftorah b'shavas chol moed Pesach." So here he's not only talking about Iyar; he's going back to the beginning of the Omer period, chol moed Pesach, Shabbos. He says, "Ma'anyin shehachia yecheskel hatzamot meinyan shehachia yecheskel hatzamot hayaveshot sharu baruach hakodesh arichut hagalot kol kach v'tamin mitzavim sheagia nisan v'lel shimurim de'atidin lehigael." So Rabbi Reisman is quoting the Siftei Tzaddik that says the reason why we read the Haftorah of the Atzamot Yeveshot, of the dry bones, Yechezkel reviving the dry bones, like Tchiyas HaMeisim during Shabbos Chol Moed Pesach, is that Leil Shimurim is the time of the Geula. We're happy about it. We're talking about it. We're singing about it. Yetzias Mitzrayim. We have such a Emunah in Hashem from that Geula. But then Leil Shimurim is over. And we didn't have a geula, and we're still sitting here in Gullus, we're celebrating Pesach, but like, we're just remembering the geula, and we're not celebrating our own. And people could kind of get despairing and give up hope from going through that. So Chazal wanted to kind of mechazik us in our emuna, and by reminding us through this Haftorah that no, you should still have hope, no, the geula is still going to come. Even if the bones are completely dry, and it seems like we missed it, like there's no geula happening here, you know, this is, the destruction's happened, even so, there's always hope that there could be a revival, and that the geula is going to come. And in a different section, in the same sefer, he really makes the connection between the idea of seichel and the idea of emuna during the time of the Omer and Iyar. He says, source 5, Lachin kasher avar katsir kalach kaitz anachnu lo nushanu mishachalaf chodesh nisan chodesh ha-geula umatchil ha-chodesh ha-sheni. So now he's talking about not only after the beginning of Pesach is gone, but after the whole month of Pesach and Nisan and the Geula is gone. Now we're up to the second month, up to Iyar. What happens? Machil Makanin believes Speko Bemuna. Ukmuwar Lael Shahmispar Shnai Mesamel Pirud. Upirud Molid Speko, Shekin Kashara Akhtu Hapnimi, Venefesh Adam It Oreret, Vechal Pirud Variboy Deo, Vidah Adam, Machilin Lid Orer Haspeko Batikpokim. So he relates this idea of the Maharal. The Maharal attributes his symbolism to the different numbers. And he says the number 2 symbolizes Pirud. Iyar is the second month, and it's related to the symbol for the number 2. Sir Zerbe Reisman, and the Maharal says the number 2, why is 2 symbolizing separation or distancing? First, there's the idea, he talks about that on the second day of creation is when Hashem separated the waters. So there's an idea that many people have heard that because Hashem separated the waters, that brought the idea of machlokes into the world. And so it doesn't say Kitov by that day, because if machlokes is brought into the world, that's not a good thing. But not only is 2 representing separation because of this, specifically the second day of creation, but also, like in geometry, the Maharal says 2 is something that can never be complete, it can never be joined, because what happens, there's you have one line and it's a unified entity. If you have 2 lines, there's a split in them. But if you have 3 or more lines, then it's possible to start creating a closed shape. As soon as you have 3 lines, you can make a triangle. You add another line, it's a square, a rectangle, a trapezoid, whatever. You add another line, the more numbers you go up and up and up, it's still going to be a complete closed shape, except for 2. He says 2 can never be complete or closed or shalem in that way, or unified. 2 is always an idea of pirud. And so Rabbi Reisman applies it to the Iyar and says that there's an idea of separation and pirud in the second month also in Iyar. Why? And he relates it to the idea of emuna. He says, what happens when there's a separation, there's like a distance, for example, a distance between us and Hashem, that leads to doubts. It's like when there are different ideas, there are different opinions, and then it gets confusing, and the person's not sure which way to follow, and they get confused, and they feel this, you know, further and further distant from clarity and from the MS and knowing what's the right way to go. And so this happens, he says, sometimes during the second month. In Iyar, not only is the beginning of Pesach gone, but, you know, Benisan Nigalu, Uvenisan Atidin Higael. Okay, now not only is Pesach gone, but like the whole Nisan Shatidin Higael is gone. We weren't redeemed, so this is so depressing. And he says that's what's possible to happen during Iyar, is that it's possible to really start wondering about it and to see that there's a distance between what we say and what we are supposed to believe and what we think should be happening and what's really happening. And it leads to doubts and it leads to confusion. And, you know, and that's the, it leads to a break in our emuna. The seichel is thinking so much about how things are supposed to be that it leads to a break in emuna. Rav Shor says something similar. He looks at Yid Nefesh. One of the names of Iyar in Melachim, which we're going to see the search for that also, is in Melachim Aleph, it says that it's called Iyar Chodesh Ziv. And so Rav Shor applies this to the second paragraph of Yid Nefesh, where it says, Hador na ez ziv ha'olam, nafshichol as avasecha, right? Ana kelna rafana la, v'haros la, nam zivecha, az chazek v'tidrapeh, v'haysa la simchas olam. So he says, what's the ziv in Yid Nefesh? The ziv is alluding to Iyar, that when it comes to the time of ziv, our nefesh is chol as avasecha. Again, there's this idea of separation from Hashem. Like, we left the clarity of Nisan and the redemption of Nisan, and our nefesh is like searching, and it's lovesick for Hashem, and it can't find, you know, like how to connect to Hashem during this time. So ultimately, Rav Shor says that is supposed to lead up to Simchas Olam, which refers to Shavuos. And somehow, Iyar is supposed to bring us through this process of doubt or confusion or distance, and we're supposed to try to make it all the way to Shavuos somehow.
Well, if it's a Sfira, it's like the ER is the only one that's completely Sfira.
So what's the connection to Sfira that you're saying?
It's not like completely thought out, but I guess that during the time of Sfira, you're supposed to work upon yourself to kind of figure out, like, understand the separation and work with that in order to ultimately get up to that Shavuos.
So it's like the time of Vod Hashem, it's the Midos, from what we said at the beginning, that's working through those complications or doubts or confusion, in order to get there, to get to Shavuos. And it's interesting, actually, because the Bnei Yisrael also quotes like a mystical idea that the letter Vav is also associated with ER. And what's the letter Vav? The letter Vav is a connecting letter that, like, adds something on to what came before it, right? Vav is and. So Vav is like what comes next after Nisan. There's Nisan, and the Vav is representing ER, of like, after this stage, then this is the next stage that might develop. And it could ultimately be connecting between Nisan and Sivan and, you know, Shavuos, to be that process and that avoda in the meantime. Okay, so speaking about this whole Emunah Safek issue, another thing that happened during the month of Iyar is that the Mun started coming down. The Chumash says in Surah 6, So it was on the 15th of Iyar that they were leaving Elim. And what happened then? The Alinu called up Bnei Israel al Moshe va Aaron ba Midbar. So they started complaining. Vayimru aleim Bnei Israel mi itein mutenu biyad Hashem b'Eretz Mitzrayim b'shivtenu al siyar basar b'achlenu lechem l'sova ki otitem otanu al hamidbar zeh l'hamid et kol ha'kha zeberav. They're complaining. They're hungry. Why do we leave? And what does Hashem say? Vayomar Hashem al Moshe hinini mamtir lechem lechem min hashamayim v'yatza'am latu dvar yom biyomo l'man anasenu ha'ilich b'torati imlo. So Hashem sends them mun during the month of Iyar, when they're complaining. And it says that what's the purpose of the mun? Laman anasenu ha'elech b'torati imlo. That should be like a test for them, if they're going to go according to my Torah or not. So what does that mean, that I'm going to test them? What's the test of the mun that happened during this time of year? So there are two different approaches in the Rishonim. In Source 7, the Sforno says, what's laman anasenu? He says, k'sheyiyah mitparnes shelo b'tzar kam ramza lo nitna Torah ela la'ochle haman. So he says, really, the Torah, the test if people are going to keep the Torah, is only going to be able to be given when there's not any kind of tsar in acquiring parnasa. Because once people have difficulty in their lives, I mean, this is the implication that I'm getting from it anyway, is that once people have tsar and they're distracted with trying to make money and sustain themselves, it's not exactly going to be a litmus test of their attachment to Torah, because it's hard. There's a challenge involved. But this time, when they don't have to worry about parnasa because the money is just coming to them, you know, easy, then it's anasenu ha'elech b'torati imlo. That's when Hashem is determining if they're going to really go according to the Torah or not. The Rashbam and the Ramban actually say the opposite, complete opposite. In Source 8, the Rashbam says, what's the test? Mitoch shabachol yom vayom einehem tuluyot l'mizonotehem, Eli. Mitoch kach yaminu bi v'yalchu b'torati, k'mo shemafrash v'parashat v'yayekev v'yancha v'yarivecha. He says, what happened when they got the mun? It's exactly the opposite. The mun wasn't a time when there was no tzar to acquire parnasa. The mun was hard to get parnasa because it wasn't coming. So they didn't know if it was coming. They had to look up to Hashem every day and have trust and have emunah that the mun and the sustenance was actually going to come to them. And then the intention, anyway, the point was they should have do that and thereby develop emunah in Hashem that He's going to be the source of giving the mun. But the test was relating to their emunah and to the fact that there was a tsar, and it was hard for them to acquire food. It wasn't automatic. And the Ramban adds to this, he says, Ki nisayon hu lahem, shelo haya biadam mazon, v'lo yiru lahem etza b'midbar rak haman, shelo yidu mitchila, v'lo shemu mi'avotam, v'yered lahem dvar yom yomo, v'yarivenu elav, v'im kol zeh shamu lalechad acharei Hashem, lo makom lechem. So he says, not only did they not have food, and so it was a test and it was a hard, like a challenge, that they didn't have the food, but also this type of challenge was something they didn't hear about, they didn't know about beforehand. They never got like a mesorah of learning from the avos about how to deal with this kind of problem. The avos never had a complete lack of food and mun coming down this way. It was a totally new test. And that was also part of the test, was that they didn't have any kind of precedent for it before. And it's like, if you think about it, you know, even nowadays, of course, we can understand that because we have preservatives and cans and we have refrigerators and all these things. But like, even in the time before refrigerators, at least they knew that they had a good crop and they had some wheat in the field that they could cut down the next day and grind its wheat and make into, you know, into bread. It wasn't like they had nothing. At least they knew they had a cow. They could check the cow. But like here, the mun, it was not like they didn't have any wheat. You know, okay, maybe they had animals, but like they were going to be used up in the Midbar. This mun was a totally new idea.
They weren't allowed to have meat until
the flood. I don't know what this story was with their cattle.
Yeah, until Matan Torah, they weren't allowed to. So this was before Matan Torah. They weren't allowed to have there.
In the immediate time?
Uh-huh. Yeah,
was that already here?
Yeah, so
that was already the time when they were... Okay.
So they probably weren't even allowed to have the meat.
Okay. Yeah, it could be. I always thought of it in terms of Shlosh Yishim Agbala, but maybe it was before that also.
I thought they weren't allowed to...
Okay, yeah, it could be. I mean, that would fit. So basically, they didn't. It was a new test according to the Rashbam and the Rambam. And I was just thinking about this aspect of the Emunah, and I kind of saw it as related to my grandfather also, because either way you look at it, I mean, it's interesting. You know, one of the things that also from Pirkei Avos is Al Tadun Neschavercha Ad Shetagelim Kamo, that like, as soon as I'm going to try to develop lessons from my grandfather's life, if he was a Holocaust survivor, it's like very, very sketchy, sticky ground to do things like that. And anytime I would speak to him also, I used to like talk to him about his like theological beliefs and different things. And it always felt like kind of wrong, but kind of like, how could I not? You know, like you can't say anything about a person who survived the Holocaust. And yet we want to try to learn from them. So like in a little tiny way, just thinking about like the Sfarno is saying, as soon as there's a distraction of Tsar, you can't determine someone's Torah observance. You know, like no one can comment on if Holocaust survivors were observant of Torah afterwards or not. Like that's completely out of our realm. It's a completely different story, a different experience, and that's not something that we could comment on. So if I'm talking about learning Emunah and learning this and that from, you know, that's nice, but like the Sfarno says, if you're going to talk about observing the Torah, like don't talk about it in the context of Tsar. He's talking about Parnassa. That happens to be the case in my grandfather's life also, even before the Holocaust. He used to say in the shtetl, he said the next door neighbor's dog ate better than he did. And he didn't always have shoes to go out. Like one winter he didn't go to school because he didn't have shoes. Like even the shtetl was really bad. And then Kavachomer, Lahavdil, the Holocaust, sustenance, survival, anything, you know, totally can't comment. But on the flip side, there is something that we could learn, that I feel that I could learn, that we could learn from my grandfather's life in the realm of Emunah. Because he, after going through the Holocaust, I mean, he wasn't observant for a long time, but I used to ask him about, like, his belief. I also used it for a paper in graduate school, and he said, like, it was apparent that he wasn't, like, so solid in his connection to Hashem or Emunah Hashem, but he said he had different phases. And when I asked, did you ever completely lose faith in Hashem? He said, it's hard to say. But then he thought for a minute, and he said in a very like strong, affirming way, he said, I believe. He said, I still believe. I'm a believing Jew. He said, I had a lot of sfeikos, I had a lot of questions, but I'm a believing Jew. And he was so, that was his answer. You know, even no matter how many times he would ask, why did Hashem do this or why did Hashem do that? No matter how many times he said that, ultimately, when push came to shove and I said, did you ever totally lose faith? The answer was no. And that's a crazy thing to have, because this is like, it, you know, again, Lahavdil, but learning a little bit of a resonating idea from the Rashbam and the Ramban in a time when a person totally is relying on Hashem and totally has to look to Hashem for survival. And like the Ramban says, there's no precedent. Like, for someone who went through the Holocaust, there's nothing comparable to that. There's no precedent, there's no mesorah of how to deal with that. And the fact that he was able to live through that and come out saying, I'm a believer, that's an unbelievable lesson in Emunah for us. That, you know, lahavdil, any kind of questions or hard times that we might have, we can, like, look to the unprecedented challenge of Emunah and apply it to the precedented, easier challenges of Emunah, in a sense, and try to get chizuk from that and learn from that. And, you know, and that also applies to Nisan and Iyar, because Nisan, again, is that time of clarity of the Geula, And ER is that time of cloudiness, of complete confusion. And all of us in our lives have times when we're inspired, where we suddenly like see something that happens that's hashgacha practice in our lives, or we hear an inspiring Dvar Torah or something, and that's that moment of clarity, or Yom Tov comes. But then it trickles off, and that's the nature of life. And Rabbi Tatz, or Rabbi Akiva Tatz, specifically talks about this with Pesach and the Omer, where like Pesach was that flash of lightning of clarity, and then the Omer, like you were saying, is the time to work on our midos, to try to, we have to do our own effort to get back to that high level, that it's not as easy, it's not as clear, but it's a time to work on our Emunah specifically, and to develop that. And specifically also talking about the Mun and Parnassah and sustenance, the Shiboli Haleket says that the time of the Omer is also when the world is judged for tevua, for, you know, for the crop of and sustenance of what's going to be that year. And that's also one of the ideas behind the minhag to put ki in the challah after Pesach, of like a segula for Parnassah, that there's an idea of like work Parnassah and Emunah for that in this time also. And especially now with the economy, people are looking for jobs. It's like a really relevant message, I think, that we could learn from, whether it's Parnassah or anything, you know, illness or other challenges that we can work on. And just the other connection to ER and Omer is Yom HaZikaron, Yom HaTzmaut. In modern times, there's things that also fall in the time of the Omer. And that's also something where, on one hand, there's a certain clarity of like, oh, the Six-Day War, like, and people who, especially who view the state of Israel as totally, you know, a nace from Hashem, a message from Hashem, a gift from Hashem, we have that clarity. But on the other hand, right after the Medina is declared, we have a war, you know, and like, even now, after we are so happy that we have a Jewish country under Jewish leadership, we have all these problems in the security and the infighting and the social problems and all these different things. It's like the Gula hasn't really come yet, but this time of ER, when we're celebrating the clarity that we have from the state of Israel, we can also be mechazik ourselves in the Emunah that it will ultimately reach the full Gula, and we'll get there. We just don't know how or where, but we can trust in Hashem that this is part of a bigger plan. And again, related to Emunah and the Seichel that we mentioned before, Zahari talks about that there's a connection to Tefillin related to ER and related to Seichel. He says there are two kinds of Tefillin, right? There's Tefillin according to Rabbeinu Tam's Shita and Tefillin according to Rashi. And the only difference between the two kinds of Tefillin is that the order of the first two paragraphs of Shema is different in the two kinds. In Tefillin of Rashi, it goes, first you have Shema, and then you have Ayayim Shemoah, the regular order that we say Shema. In the Tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam, it's reversed. First is Ayayim Shemoah, and then there's Shema. And there's a connection between the idea of Tefillin and Emunah, and these two types of Tefillin, and different kinds of Emunah. So in Source 10, Rabbi Reisman explains this a little bit. He says, Mitzvot HaNachas Tefillin, he tis kor yom yomit lechizuk hamuna ukafish nefsak b'shulchan aruch michavim lahan chatam sheitzivanu kadosh baruch hu laniach arba parshiot elu sheyesh behem yichud shmo yitzia mitzrayim al zera keneged aliv al rosh keneged amoach kedeshin is kor nisiv neflot shasa yimanu sheheim orim al yichudo. So he says that tefillin, which that same tefillin that the Ari talks about as in a more general kind of abstract way, he says somehow the tefillin of Rashi and he says specifically the Tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam brings a person Seichel and is connected to the month of ER. So Rabbi Reisman kind of explains this a little more and says that there's an idea that Tefillin is a daily reminder of Emunah, because what's in the Tefillin, it talks about Yetzias Mitzrayim and Hashem's Yichud, and it's supposed to be a daily, you know, something to strengthen people in their Emunah. And where is it located? On the arm, which is close to the heart, and on the head, which is close to the mind, so that we remember the Nisim Hashem did. And he makes a distinction. He says, what does that mean that Tefillin Shel Rabbeinu Tam has Vayam Shema first and Rashi has Shema first? He says, Shema, the line of Shema, is if we're talking about Tefillin as a symbol of Emunah and something that's strengthening us in Emunah, the line of Shema is like blind Emunah. It's just a declaration. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Every Jew knows, every Jew says, right? Emunah Pshuta, he says, blind, straight faith. He says, Vayam Shema is Emunah, which is bolstered by intellect. Vayam Shemoa talks about the schar and the onesh, and if I do this, then this is going to happen. If I do this, then this is going to happen. It's more complex. It's more cognitive, kind of. And the fact that Rashi's tefillin first has Shema and then has Vahaya indicates to us this importance and the power of Emunah Pshuta, just prioritizing, putting first, having that straight declaration of faith, Emunah Pshuta. Whereas Tefillin Sha'arbeinu Tam is the message, which is just as equally important, two different shitas, the message of know what's more important, what we should prioritize, is having emuna, using our thought, and trying to understand Hashem, and trying to connect Him using our intellect. And that's why the Ari says that the one that's related to Iyar specifically is Sha'arbeinu Tam, because Iyar is the time of intellect, of working through emuna using our minds. And I thought it's interesting also because these two ways are also related to the emuna and the seichel that I was talking about with my grandfather, because like I said, he had this this intellectual piece which was very active in his life and in his Judaism, but also in a way the way I see his like becoming a Baal Tshuva and maintaining his belief is in a way maybe just from the emuna of Shutz also, because when I was doing this work for graduate school, I asked him about his life when he came to America, and he, even though he wasn't totally religious, he did keep certain mitzvahs, and they kept generally kosher in the house, and they made Kiddush HaMotzi on Friday night, even if they weren't so makbid about Hilchos Shabbos exactly. And I asked him why they did those things, you know, and I expected him to say, well, maybe, you know, it's just cultural, it's like, that's what people, we just did that because that's what people do, I don't know. But that's not what he said. He said, because I still had a Yiddish neshama. I was like, whoa. He said, I grew up in an Orthodox, a frum home. He said, I still had it in me. And something from that frum Hasidish home that he grew up in just like stuck with him. And to me, that's the emunah pshuta. Like, even though it's important to learn and to develop a connection to Hashem through the intellect, bottom line, we also, emunah pshuta is really important. And that's like the life force that's kind of a different level than intellect. And I think especially in our circles, I guess, of modern Orthodox approach to, like, you know, very intellectual, like, there are a lot of Baruch Hashem, there are a lot of Shiurim going on, there are Yom Yuns, there are, you know, Divrei Torah on the internet and print it out, and every community has their publication, and, like, it's unbelievable, the Harbat is the Torah that's here in the world with us today. It's really, it's a crazy thing. But, like, at the same time, I think that we kind of need a little bit extra chizuk in the Moon of Shutzah realm also, because that's something we think of, like, oh, it was in the Shtetl, like, they just, you know, they just had blind faith, whatever. And now we're intellectual, we think about it, but we also need the emunah pshuta. It's also really important for us. We can't put Judaism in an intellectual box and not let it permeate ourselves and our experiences. And that's a level that I think we could also learn from my grandfather and from these ideas of Nisan and Iyar and the Tefillin. And again, just another idea about the Tefillin that also relates to my grandfather is that Tefillin was kind of a major step in his becoming Baal Tshuva, becoming Shomer Shabbos and Tefillin. When he was ready in his 80s, my father went to buy Tefillin for my brother's bar mitzvah, for my brother. And my grandfather, when he found out that's what my father was doing, he actively asked my father, he said, you know what, you're going shopping for Tefillin, can you buy me a new pair of Tefillin also? So he did. And ever since then, Mamish, every single day that a person puts on Tefillin, my grandfather would put on that Tefillin. And like I remember, like in the house, even at the end of his life, when he was like sometimes in with it, you know, his mind was clear, sometimes he was kind of out of it, even when he needed someone else to put it on him, he would still put on the tefillin. And that was a special avodah of his also. It didn't require going out of the house, which was hard for him. Like, it was really something that he was careful about. And I think the messages of tefillin really resonate in his life and his messages for us. So we have the seichel, we have the muna, and all these related ideas. Another idea for Iyar that's related to this time and also to my grandfather's life is the idea of building and building a new life. And I mentioned before that one of the names for Iyar is Chodesh Ziv. So I'm just skipping over source 11. Source 11 just mentions, just to kind of wrap up the last part, and it relates to different ideas for the last part of this year also, that B'nai Yisrael is just talking about the letter Vav again, and he says Vav again is an additive kind of letter, and it's related to Iyar, because Iyar, he says, im lo karav kirvanu b'nisan yakrivenu b'Iyar. That how is Vav and Iyar additive to Nisan? That if Hashem didn't bring us close through Nisan, then He'll bring us close through Iyar. And maybe that's related to these ideas, these two different paths of emuna in Nisan and Iyar. If the emuna pshuta method didn't work for us, so like let's work with the emuna through the intellect method. You know, like there are different models and there are different times for them. They're both important. And if not one way, then the other way. So that is just another idea related to the Vav and to the Emunah. But moving on, so Source 12 tells us in Malachim Aleph It was Vayhi b'shmonim shana v'arba meyot shana l'tzeit b'nei Yisrael meretz Mitzrayim b'shana arvit b'chodesh ziv hu ha'chodesh ha'sheni l'mloch shlomo al Yisrael v'yiven habayit l'ashem. So not only was the mon given in Iyar, in Chodesh Ziv, but the first base of Migdash was built in Chodesh Ziv in Iyar. And what's the point? Why is it called Chodesh Ziv? What does it have to do with building base of Migdash? The Radak says, source 13, Hu Chodesh Iyar shehu sheni l'chadashim, ki nisan rosh l'chadashim. In the Kra Ziv, k'moshe pershu rabotenu zal, de'e be ziva leilane, perish zohar prachim vanitanim. So he says, what is ziv? Ziv literally means glow, like a light. And he says it refers to the second month, which is Iyar. Why? Because during this month, there's a glow coming from like the blossoms of the trees, that all the trees are starting to grow flowers and to blossom, and it creates this beautiful ambiance and like a glow in the air outside, because it's the springtime. So that's one idea about Ziv. And the next idea in source 14 from the Ma'ari Kra is that, he says the Ziv refers to something else. He says, Pitcher no bechodesh she'ora sholetet bo, hu iyar, she'kvar chama sholetet bo lam, she'kol mi she'rotze livnot binyan mikuyam sarich livnoto be'et chom tzach alei or, v'lo b'yom ha'onan, kedei she'dabik hasid bakir v'lo yipo hatiach min hakir. He says the glow is not referring to the trees. The glow is actually referring to the light from the sun, because in Iyar you get, it's like the time when the sun like rules everything. It's like that spring glow where like the sunny days feel like spring sunny days. It's like warm and beautiful and you feel happy. It's springtime. It's not the same thing as sunny days in the winter. It's and he says that that's an appropriate time to build, because in old times anyway, but also in modern times in some way, that in order for building to work, it's best if it's not on a cloudy day, but on a day when like the sun could kind of help dry out the materials. And especially, you know, in bricks and mortar and everything, it dries them out, it bakes them, it strengthens them. And the best time to do this kind of building is in the spring when the sun is warm and shining. And from these two ideas about Chodesh Ziv and Iyar, I understood like from it an idea of building in two different aspects. One is like building life, like the trees and the flowers is a new life that's glowing, and that's something that's strong in Iyar. And the other type of building is like a construction of a building, and the sun needs to shine down on that. And the idea of like the weather being appropriate for the building is also an idea to think about. So first of all, again, we could make a connection. Yom Ha'atzmaut, Yom Yerushalayim, is also an idea of building during Iyar, a new life to the Jewish people, a new building of a country. Definitely those themes are there also. And I was thinking about my grandfather, and it seemed like a very natural connection also of building a new life, building a new structure, a new home. That's really what he did. He went through, you know, he lived in the Shtetl, he went through the Holocaust, and then he came here. And he had post-traumatic stress syndrome. I'm sure many people who went through the Holocaust had that or have that, and it's not diagnosed, but we knew about that. And he could have just been depressed his whole life and, you know, that was that, and done whatever, just eke out whatever he needs to do, and that would be that. But he came to America, and he got married soon after, and he built a family, a solid family with good values, and he got a job, a solid job to support them, and he really worked to develop this new life. And that's something that is, again, related to Iyar, and is related to this theme of Iyar as a time of new life and rebuilding as a message for us. And also that we can learn from it in our own personal lives, this idea of Bilvavi Mishkan Evna, right? We're all building every day, whether we're building our personal lives as, you know, in our jobs or in our families or in whatever personal goals we have for ourselves. And in order to build, though, we have to have the proper weather. That's like what the Ma'ari Kra is saying, right? It has to be sunny. We have to have weather that's going to be conducive to the type of building that we want to do. My grandfather built the type of family he wanted to have. And when we go about building our lives, especially us, you know, we're young adults, we're just embarking on this stage of, like, being independent and building our future. So, it's true for anyone also, because whatever stage in life you are, the next day is a new day, and you're always building and growing, but especially for us, that we really have the opportunity to maximize this era and this period in our lives where, you know, maybe in seminary or something, we would like imagine how we want to live our lives, what kind of ruchnius and avodas Hashem we want to have, or what kind of family and marriage we want to have, or whatever it is. And then here we are starting it it's very easy to fall into the routine and the habit, and this is just what needs to be done, and now I need to go to work because that's what has to happen because I need to pay my rent and blah, blah. And then just get and do what needs to be done because it needs to be done, and kind of forget about the idealistic, amazing potential that we realized earlier that this stage of our life could have. So in building, we have to have the proper mindset, the proper weather, to really solidify those, you know, that time. And we were talking about, you know, especially now when we have like financial responsibilities, and you go to work, and people nowadays spend so many hours at work. Like, how are you supposed to have time to build that beautiful life that you imagined as a, you know, a teenager or whatever? When are you supposed to do that exactly if you're at work all day? And even though this is, doesn't totally answer the question, it's still a question to be considered. But one way to look at it, at least in the meantime, when all the jobs nowadays seem to have crazy hours or whatever else, not pay so much. But one way to think about it maybe is that also a job is its own kind of building, and it's its own opportunity that we can maximize. Like, we just read Parshas Kedoshim, which is full of everyday kinds of halachos, bein adam l'chaveiro, and business laws, and even while we're going about the things that seem to be the means to building a life, it itself could also be a time to maximize it, to say, well, you know what, even though I want to be building my bias, but here I am getting my parnasa, however I'm doing it, think of it as Nevodas Hashem, and think of it as, yeah, but I'm going to be mocked on the finances, and I'm going to be mocked to try to think about what I say to my coworker, or to my students, or to whatever it is, or to my patients, or, you know, and really try to use those opportunities to make them what we imagine them to be, and to make the life that we want to have. So that's the idea of building in ER. The next idea I also wanted to talk about is, which we mentioned with the letter Vav associated with ER, is the idea of being a link, that we already said that ER comes between Nisan and Sivan, so it intrinsically is, you know, something, supposed to be some kind of transition between the clarity of Nisan and the redemption of Nisan and the gift of Pesach and Yetzias Mitzrayim and the earning of Kabbalat Torah and Shavuos. And so, like we said, people work on their midos during this time. It's in that sense, it's a link, it's a letter vav, between Nisan and Sivan. And also, it's interesting because if we're saying that ER is associated with the letter Vav, and it's a connection, it's easy to understand how it's a connection kind of month. It connects between Nisan and Sivan. At the same time, we also said before that ER is a separator. Excuse me, that ER is the second month, and two is Pirud, right? So how is it that the same month of ER, it's a link, it connects, but it also distances? Like, what's that supposed to mean? So on one hand, first I was just thinking that every midah has a potential to be used in either direction, to either extreme. And so ER is a time where it has the potential to be a link, but it also has the potential to be a distancer. And we have to try to use it to the best of our ability for, you know, in the best way. But Yosef actually thought of a different idea. My husband said that, based on a Dvar Torah of Rav Moshe Wolfson, that about how it could be both at the same time in different ways. Rav Wolfson writes about that at Kriyat Yam Suf, right? We got out of Mitzrayim, and it's the time of really being unified as one Am. And leaving through the Yam Suf is like this communal experience and process of going out from being slaves to being free, to being Hashem's nation. That's a communal experience. At the same time, though, the Midrash says that every Shevet, maybe even every single person, had their own path in the Yam Suf. Even though they were all walking to the same goal, and they were all going through the same process, each person had to do it in a different way, in their own path. And what Yosef said is that this is, in a way, you could think about it, that's what we're doing in the time of the Omer also, because we're coming out of a communal experience, out of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and we're going towards a communal experience. We're going towards Matan Torah. That's like the two greatest Am experiences of the Jewish people thus far. But here we are then talking about how, you know, we're Bikiva students, and we have to work on our midos, and their midos associated with each week of Sphira, and it's an introspection time, and our Avodas Hashem. These are very personal ideas, very individual ideas. And even if we're going, you know, Pesach is communal and Shavuos is communal, that of Avodah is not so communal. You could talk about it in general, but really, it's very private, and it's really personal. So it makes sense. So that is what ER is. On one hand, ER is a link. ER is a time of Klal Yisrael, and especially, again, with these modern day Hatzmaut Yom Yerushalayim is also a modern day Am Yisrael time and a link for all of us. And at the same time, it's a separator. We also need to separate ourselves during this time and think of ourselves as individuals who need to go through our own life paths and our own avoda in that way. And again, I thought there was a connection. I think of my grandfather as a person who embodied this idea of being a link. he, on one hand, talking about Klal Yisrael, he felt a very strong connection to Klal Yisrael in his own way, where he, every day, he used to get these Yiddish newspapers every day, and he would, like, religiously, he would read them, and he would follow the Jewish news all the time, and he would always want to know what's going on in Israel, what's the Israeli news, and with the president, is this president good for the Jews? Like, he was very, very mindful of that. You might call it, like, a horizontal link to Am Yisrael. At the same time, for me, as a grandchild, we always saw him as a link, you might say, like, vertically, like, in history. Because here he was coming out of, like, Shtetl Europe, which is a completely different universe of existence, you know, from, like, modern-day America. And, like, having gone through the crazy time of the Holocaust, and then he's here, it's like a window to a different world. And so we would love, he would tell us stories. We would ask him, sometimes we would, like, ask him to tell us about either a specific holiday or in general about, like, the Shtetl or about what happened in the Holocaust. And he would just start talking, and it would just, the words with the stories would just, like, flow, and he would go and go and go until, like, he was tired and had enough. But it was really, like, to have that connection, our generation, who has some kind of connection to the previous world of, the, you know, of a different reality of Judaism, is a very special thing. And he was able to serve as that kind of link for us. And we don't think of ourselves as that, but especially now as we're getting older and we're adults, we are that also in a way, because every generation is a link. This is what Misora is. Every generation, Hashem gives us the opportunity to learn from the past and to pass down to the future and to put our own, inject it with our own understanding and our own chiddush and to be another link in the chain of Misora. And so that's definitely a message that we can learn from my grandfather, who is maybe in a way a more obvious link and window to, you know, to a different era of Am Yisrael's development. And remember for ourselves, whether it's, you know, whether we have students or whether we have children or whether we're going to have children, Mir Hashem, or any person could be a student, you know, just from you say something that inspires them or teaches them. And really, we all have opportunities to pass that on. And that's something, an important responsibility that we can try to remember and learn from. Two last ideas. The two other days that are special in Iyar that I want to mention, one is Pesach Sheni and one is Lag BaOmer. Right? Pesach Sheni is this week. So what's the message of Pesach Sheni? Common idea is Pesach Sheni was the time when people who were Tameh, who weren't able to bring the Korban Pesach, whether because they were Tameh or if they were too far away from Beis HaMikdash to come. So on Pesach Sheni, they had the opportunity for a second chance, that they could come and give a Korban anyway, even though they missed out on the first chance. It's a big idea of second chances. And source 15, I have just a passage from Rabbi Yitzchak Ginsburg's book called Rectifying the State of Israel, where he talks about this idea of second chances and ER in particular. He says, every holiday in the Jewish calendar teaches us a basic lesson, how to fulfill our purpose in life, how to serve God maximally the whole year. The message of the second Pesach, and thus the message of the month of ER, is that it is never too late. No matter in what situation we find ourselves, no matter how low we have fallen, no matter how impure we may feel or how far away from our life's goal we are, we can always, with God's help, rectify our situation. And so it is with regard to the state of Israel. The fact that it was founded and its wars were fought and won in the month of Iyar teaches us that we must not despair. The power of light can overcome the darkness. It is never too late to rectify the situation. And it's like this similar message to from the Haftorah of Shabbos Pesach also with Tzamos Yevesios, but just continuing on through ER, that it's never too late, he says. And no matter how low we think we are or how far we are from that goal that we were talking about, building our lives and like, well, hold on a second, this is not really what I was daydreaming that I would develop my life at this stage to be, but it's not too late because tomorrow's a new day and now is a new time. And we can be mechazik ourselves in that way to really try again. And that's another idea from like B'nai Sassor about the letter Vav. He said, "In lo karav kervanu b'nisan, yakrivenu b'iyar." Even if we wanted to have that emunah pshuta of Nisan, but we weren't able to, so then it's not too late. You can have an ER. Even if we wanted to get close to Hashem in a more elevated kind of way, like on Pesach, but we didn't, it's not too late to do our shalos and to work ERs here, and we can still do it. And again, this is an idea that I saw in my grandfather's life because he did that. I mean, his life could have been completely destroyed even though he survived the Holocaust, because that's what the Holocaust was, this complete destruction. It's interesting, actually. There's another acronym of ER that's brought down is the last pasuk in Perek Vav of Tehillim, Oyvai Yashuvu Yevoshu Raga, where the Perek Vav of Tehillim is about like Hashem, please destroy our enemies and save us from our enemies. And this pasuk which talks about that, and that's also kind of like a tefillah after, like, the idea of the Holocaust, that in ER it's kind of this rebuilding time, coming out of that. And my grandfather really, he used his second chance, because first he used his second chance just in building a life in America. And then he was in his 70s when he was a Baal Tshuva. Like, that's a crazy, crazy thing. To turn over a new leaf like that at such a late stage really brings home the message of it's never too late. No matter how far away a person thinks they are or it really is, it's never too late. And I think it's interesting because he used his second chance well and tried to maximize it in his life. And in a way, Hashem gave him second chances back, just surviving the Holocaust altogether. But also, in his older years, it's funny, I have this like memory that every single time we would visit him, even as a kid, probably related to his post-traumatic stress, whatever it was, every time we would leave, he would talk to us as if it was the last time he would ever see us. And it's understandable anyway, like an older person, but like it's specifically something that I think of him with, where like, this is it, like, I don't know if I'm going to see, because we didn't live close by to him, so I don't know if I'm going to see, whatever, but, you know, here's my wish for you, for your life, and this is how you should, you know, be, you should bracha, whatever, and then the next time, the same thing, and then the next time, you know, Hashem keep giving him second chances, and he tried to use each chance, in its maximum, but Baruch Hashem, he had a lot of second chances, and he lived to be, like, 96 years old, and even this year, we thought that at Hanukkah time, that was going to be it was going to be the end. And Hashem gave him a second chance, and it wasn't the end, and he lasted till right before Pesach. So really, from his end and from Hashem's end, that message of second chances is really something we could learn from him. And finally, we have Lag BaOmer. What's Lag BaOmer all about? So one of the things that we celebrate in Lag BaOmer is that it's the Hilula of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. It's his yard site, and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is the one, Mesora says, who revealed the hidden message of Torah to us. And so Lag BaOmer is a time also to celebrate like the more hidden aspects of Torah, that they were revealed in a sense. Some sources call it the Or Gadol that's in the Torah Sinai Star, that was revealed to the world in a sense when he died. And that's associated with Lag BaOmer. So one of the minhagim that people have in Lag BaOmer is to shoot bows and arrows. And one of the ideas that the Bnei Yisrael brings down that's related to that is not even intrinsically related to a bow and arrow, but just to the word. Because the word for bow is keshet. And here comes my favorite topic. Keshet also means rainbow. So what's the message of the rainbow? What does the bow and arrow and the rainbow have to do with Lag BaOmer? Because usually Bnei Yisrael says, usually we just see light. And that's the way the world is. But white light, he doesn't exactly explain in this way, but the main idea that he's trying to say is that a rainbow is a revelation of that, the hiddenness that's included in that light. Because we usually just see white light, but when there's suddenly a prism or there's suddenly a rain, and that white light splits up and we see those light waves that were really there all along, but they were just hidden, and they were more beautiful, and more elaborate, and more complex than this plain white light. But sometimes that hiddenness could be revealed. And so we remember the rainbow in using the bow, and the bow and arrow on Lag BaOmer, because Lag BaOmer was that day of like the beginning of the process of the revelation of that deeper light of Torah and the development through Hasidus. In modern day, there's so much out there and like these deep, deep Torah ideas in very kind of mundane, easy access places. It's a very special thing that we have access to nowadays and that we can celebrate on Lag BaOmer. And also the idea of celebrating the Hilula altogether of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. What's the idea? Why would we celebrate a yard site? Usually we don't celebrate, you know, the death of someone. But there's an idea also, Rav Dessler talks about it, that when a tzaddik dies, his neshama was already on such a high level that when he's in that transition point between Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba, there's a certain clarity that comes, that's revealed to the world of Ruchnius. And that's why we celebrate the Hilula of people like that, because we're celebrating that in that time and since that time, there's been a different kind of revelation into the world of Ruchnius. And it's interesting because I kind of, in a kind of like a weird, creepy-ish kind of way, I kind of saw that like at the very end of my grandfather's life, where usually we would talk about, he would tell us his stories and he would tell us his questions and his challenges, or we would just spend time and play games and, you know, visit him and everything. But at the end of his life, he started like talking in a different way that we never really heard him talk speak before. Already he took his time. I was on the phone and he wasn't able to move around as much. So I asked him, I said, oh, like, were you able to take Luvanes drug? Like, how was your sukkah? He said, of course. He said, I have to take all the mitzvahs that I can get. I was like, whoa. Like, I haven't heard you say that before. I didn't say that to him, but, like, I never heard him talk that way before. Like, yeah, that's the clarity. That's the Ruchnius perspective that we have to have. We have to take all the mitzvahs we can get. And my brothers said that when they came to visit him Hanukkah time, as I said, when we thought that was really going to be the end, they said when they were singing Zmiros at the Shabbos table with him, his face like glowed with this Ruchni Simcha kind of glow. Also that, like, they hadn't really encountered before. And this clarity that came. And when I spoke to him, he said to me once, he said, always walk with God. Like, okay. You know, like, but like sometimes we just have exposure to this clarity and to this pure perspective on life and on Ruchnius and on Hashem and like what we should be thinking and doing and how to view things, that we really have to take advantage of that. And like that's what we celebrate in Lag BaOmer, and the message that we can take from it for, you know, for the rest of the time and the rest of the year. And Mir Hashem, Hashem should just help us take the clarity of Nisan and the clarity of Lag BaOmer and the Midos that we can learn from our forefathers and help us grow in our Vodas Hashem towards Matan Torah. And my grandfather's Mir Hashem, his neshama should have an aliyah from this. It should all grow in our Vodas Hashem.